This episode is sponsored by United Refrigeration and Westermeyer Industries, revolutionizing your HVACR experience. Visit URI.com for all your HVACR needs, offering real-time inventory, personalized pricing, and a nearby stock feature. Access quick pick replacement parts and branch details effortlessly. With 350-plus fully stocked locations across North America, our knowledgeable staff are ready to assist with the solutions you need. Exclusive offer. Use code ARPOD on URI.com to get a $10 gift card when purchasing the Westermeyer Oil Float, part number W4300-38F. These high-performance floats are not just compatible with their own oil separators, but also available as a crossover model. Conveniently stocked at United Refrigeration. That's code ARPOD to claim your $10 gift card. Visit URI.com now.
The Sporland Division of Parker Hannifin Corporation is sporting this podcast. Sporland is the leading manufacturer of HVAC and R components. Using quality materials and craftsmanship, Sporland maintains a commitment to innovation, manufacturing excellence, service, and support for its customers since 1934. The company is known for its catch-all filter dryers, thermostatic expansion valves, solenoid valves, pressure regulating valves, suction filters, electric valves, controllers, supermarket monitoring solutions, chemicals, smart service tools, ZoomLock Max Press to Connect, and ZoomLock Push to Connect refrigerant fittings. If folks want to learn more, what do they do?
You can go to sporland.com.
I guess that's Jim and John for Sporland signing off.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Advanced Refrigeration Podcast. You're the host, Brett Wetzel and Kevin Compass. How was your Christmas, man?
Oh, it wasn't bad. Short, but not too bad.
Did you get any more packouts?
No, I did not get anything for Christmas.
You and me both. Why is that?
I don't. Me and my wife don't buy each other presents.
Are you going to set her on vacation?
No. It's just a waste of money. I don't want her to buy me something I don't want. She doesn't want me to buy something that she doesn't want. So we don't do presents. It's actually nice.
Yeah, all right. I got you. Yeah, I didn't get anything either. Kids had fun. That's all that really matters. So they can, the 3 months of prep for 10 minutes of utter chaos. And then, oh, I'm done.
For them to play with some, like, cheap stocking stuff or toy the entire time and the expensive toy they don't even touch.
Yeah. Yeah. Or every single project that you get them, they want to do instantly. And I'm still, and I got three kids, you know what I mean? And I'm still looking for batteries and all that other crap.
Yeah, see, I'm smart. I get batteries ahead of time. I just had to put together, like, 75 different, like, pieces of furniture and desks and other, like, really cheaply made with terrible instruction things.
Yeah, how'd that, what was that one thing you were talking about where you heard cursing? What was going on there?
Oh, that was my wife trying to put together a desk. And I looked at it and I was this thing's a piece of shit. Ended up having to drill a couple new holes and through bolt shit. I'm like, God, these furniture gets cheaper and cheaper every year.
It was like the IKEA type stuff.
Yeah, but Amazon IKEA version.
Awesome.
Yeah, I was not thrilled. This stuff gets worse and worse to put together every year.
Yeah, no, I agree. It is what it is, but everything's made to fall apart now. Because otherwise, if not, you're spending a couple $100 on a desk that they're going to just destroy. Where'd you go? Internet broke.
I leaned over and hit the escape button. I went to go turn my mic up and my elbow hit the escape button.
I was talking and all of a sudden I looked up and you were gone. And I was like, all right, cool.
No, that was me. All right, let's go.
All right, so tonight we're talking about CO2 and hot gas defrost. Or I guess it's like mid gas defrost, right?
I call it below freezing defrost.
There are some versions out there that are hot gas, but I guess let's get into it. So what are some of the racks that you've seen with the hot gas defrost out there?
Like legitimate, actually hot gas defrost.
All right. So let's do your IKEA version hot gas, where it's basically using vapor from the flash tank.
Okay, so you got the hold up here. There's a couple different versions. We could start. I like to start like this. So hot gas defrost, low temp, but you utilizing discharge gas from the low temp compressors. This is like a Carnot style. So, and we're gonna start with this, and we're gonna talk hot gas defrost, but reverse flow.
Let me share this, and this is a Husband document. I want to see if it's anything like this.
It's not going to be.
Oh, all right. Then I'll share that later.
Because theirs is patented their way. Like Carnot, they do hot gas inverse, meaning they do hot gas down the liquid line. So they don't do it down the suction line like a normal traditional rack. They do theirs down the liquid line. So they take discharge gas. Now, this part works fairly well. They take discharge gas off of the low temp compressors, and they have a Danfoss pressure reducing or outlet pressure regulator on there after the compressors. So there's a outlet pressure regulator on there. So they're boosting up the discharge pressure on the low temp compressor side and oil separator side to 515 pounds. So what they're doing is they're keeping the low temp at a constant 515 pounds. Does a couple things. It keeps the low temp with a good discharge or good pressure on the discharge. So it keeps the mass flow up. So the separator works fairly well. Then it's also at the same time making enough differential between the flash tank and the high pressure for it to return. So what they're doing is they're taking that discharge vapor. Now, mind you, at 515 pounds, you're still at, what is that? I got to bring up a PT chart. At 515 pounds, it's still fairly low. I believe it's below freezing. With CO2, you get to scroll so far on the chart. Well, actually, 515 pounds is 35 degrees. So it's just slightly above freezing. So what they're doing then is they take that discharge gas and they run it through a heat exchanger. I'm sorry, back that up. That's medium temp. So that 515 pounds at 35 degrees, they're taking that and injecting it into the liquid line of whatever circuit is defrosting. Now it's going to flow backwards. And while it's flowing backwards, there's no check valves in these Carnot style stores. So they're flowing down the liquid line with hot gas from the low temp compressors at 515 pounds. It goes through the EEV, which is now 100% open when it's in defrost. It goes through that EEV, and now it's flowing backwards through the EEV, through the liquid line. It's just like normal refrigerant flow would be. It's going through the evaporator now and defrosting the coil. It's going through, and now it's turning into a liquid.
So there's no, didn't you tell me one time, so the expansion valve is way oversized for that reason, as well as there's no nozzle in the distributor either, correct?
So there is, and the last couple stores we're doing in the store I'm about to start up next week, I'm very curious to see if we're going to have issues, because they switched to Gutner coils, and Gutner is putting nozzles in the coils, and we already had flow issues on the dairy coolers we did on these expansion stores, but I spent enough time looking at them. I don't think we're getting the flow we need out of the orifices, because the Reef Plus coils that are at all the other stores are one pipe. So it's single pipe in, single pipe out coils.
So that's why you don't need the distributor, because, okay, that kind of sucks then, because unless they'd have to get fancy with the outlet of the expansion valve, put a side port in there and do some kind of craziness where they'd have to like re-engineer it, like with a solenoid or whatever, to make sure that flow doesn't go through the expansion valve, but yet around.
Yeah. I know a couple of them, they upsize the orifices to get the flow out of them, but
did it work?
I don't know. Nobody's answered that question for me yet, but so they go through and then they come back and dump into the medium temp suction accumulator.
How big is the suction accumulator?
It's massive. It's, you've seen one before. It's 6 foot.
Oh yeah. Okay. So it almost looks like the intercooler that they use. Yeah.
It is the intercooler. So it is an intercooler. So they are dumping this raw liquid back into the suction, which is an intercooler. So it's either it is technically a liquid vessel and a accumulator at the same time. Mm-hmm. So they're dumping it straight into the suction accumulator for the medium temp. And what they do is the liquid that's at the bottom of this tank gets recirculated to the low temp fixture's liquid supply. So the low temp liquid supply is coming out of the bottom of the intercooler and is feeding all your other circuits. So that's how Carnot does it. It's a simple two solenoid system. They have a suction solenoid on the actual device. Yeah. And then they have your liquid solenoid. I'm sorry, your hot gas solenoid, which you're injecting with. All you do is when you go into hot gas defrost, you shut off the suction solenoid. It energizes the hot gas solenoid, allows the hot gas to flow backwards through the evaporator down the liquid line. So it flows through and then it comes back through another header. And that header dumps into the intercooler.
Oh, that's confusing.
It's basically same flow defrost. And then I get it.
I just said I'm envisioning this as you're rolling through this, and I'm thinking it's just, I don't know. It's hard to pinpoint because like I've seen some of the older, like almost like a EnviroGuard rack where like Costco used to use I'm sure they still do the four pipe headers where you had a liquid header, a return gas header, and all that other stuff. And I'm just,
yeah, they do that at every one of their stores still.
Yeah. All right.
So I think I should just bring up the diagram of how the rack is and we can just take a screenshot of it.
Yes.
All right. You start talking about that one. I'll bring us up.
Okay. All right, cause otherwise it's really hard to I'm going through it with you. Like, all right, I follow you. All right. You lost me. So we're back. Good. I finally found this. So let's roll through this. And now we can explain it. I'm going to follow it with my cursor just to make sure I understand what the hell is going on here. So this is the CO2 transcritical system, the Carnot one that you're speaking of. And go ahead and start. I'm just going to follow the cursor as you're talking here, starting with the low-temp CO2 okay. compressors.
So you get your low-temp CO2 compressors. Mm-hmm. Okay. Then just coming out of there, just coming out, you would have, right where your cursor is, there would be a Danfoss pressure regulating valve.
It'd probably be this one right here then, huh?
Correct. You got that pressure regulating valve right there. Okay. Then to the left of it, you have your hot gas supply line going to the hot gas header. Okay.
Okay.
Now, those all tie into the liquid line. That is the liquid line right there. So
is everything going to defrost at the same time?
No. So they don't show, but there's stops on there. So okay. There's going to be liquid and suction stops. So you're going to have liquid stops on every line.
So probably right before here. So like your liquid stops would essentially be right here. So if you would
liquid stops and check valve, so it can't flow backwards.
Correct. Okay.
So they don't show it on there. And then you're going to have hot gas solenoids, just like you would on a normal rack.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have hot gas solenoids now, except we're going in the liquid lines, not the suction lines.
Mm.
So we're going to go down through the liquid lines,
mm-hmm.
head towards the coils. You're going to mm-hmm. go through the EEVs, mm-hmm. through the coils,
mm-hmm.
back down the suction line. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to come back to the suction over here. Mm-hmm. And they don't show it, but there's a separate header on here. That is the defrost return header. So you're going to have that suction gas is going to be coming out of there and it's going to return when the solenoid's open, it's going to return to the liquid intercooler. for the low temp and medium temp. So this intercooler is basically a vessel. It is providing a few things. It is an accumulator for the medium temp. It's providing a buffer for the liquid.
So let me go through that real quick. So here's your basic regular flash tank or liquid receiver. The liquid is typically going out of your medium temp, and then the suction should theoretically be coming back as a vapor. So in case it doesn't, it'll just dump into the intercooler here. Go ahead, continue.
That intercooler is providing a cushion, so you don't have liquid feeding out of it and going to the medium temp compressors. It is also providing some subcooling for the liquid that is going out towards the low temp, because that flash tank, say it's running like 33, 35 degrees. Mm-hmm. It's really subcooling. It's not the greatest. You may have a degree or two if you're lucky. It's just not good all around. Now, obviously, with low temp, the more subcooling you have, the more efficient it is. So what we are doing is we are essentially taking that and we're running it at medium temp suction pressure. So that tank is, say, 400 pounds. Say it's running like a plus 18 or whatever it is. In this diagram, it's a plus 23. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we take that liquid and we drop it the saturation down to a plus 23. Now you're going to boil off some of that liquid that's in that tank. It's going to cause a cooling effect, and it's going to cause that liquid in that tank, the temperature, to drop. Mm-hmm. So now you're feeding a higher subcooled liquid to your low temp circuits, the liquid lines, to the EEVs. So now they have more subcooling. So now it's more efficient. And also the thing it does is it reduces the pressure drop across the EEV. So now you don't have an EEV with a 500 to 200 pound pressure drop. So you have 200 pounds or 300 pounds of pressure drop through an EEV all the time. Makes the EEV massive. So now you go from 400 pounds or 427 in this example to 220 pounds.
Running on these compressors, right? Yeah. So you might have a 200 pound pressure drop.
Correct. Which derates the EEVs, which helps them with their sizing issues. It helps keep a more steady valve when you're not running oversized. Now, the issue with this system is the way that they do the hot gas. Since you flow backwards through the valve, you need a certain flow size or flow rate through the valve. So it has to be in a minimum of an SERD. It's the smallest valve you could use, even on a case coil. So even on a 4-foot coil, you may have an SERD valve in there. If it's a Carnot reverse defrost.
That's a big freaking valve for that. Look at that.
It's like a 4 or 5 ton valve.
I'm holding it in my hand. That's what this one is.
It's an SERD. Like an average case percentage base value, maybe 2%. Wow. Now, the problem with this is because this is almost below freezing saturated hot gas, because it's coming off the low temp header. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, we're not running a plus 20, 23 SST in a medium temp. We're running way lower. So like your heat content is dependent on whatever discharge gas you get off those compressors. So what they do is they slam the low temp suction to Jesus and run like a minus 28. They want to get the discharge superheat up, because the discharge superheat is what's defrosting everything. It still works. It just takes a longer defrost. Where hot gas may be like 10 minutes, this may take 40.
All right. Because usually, like, I only know this, and don't call me a nerd for it. I only know this because I ran the numbers because I was trying to figure something out. But that temperature coming out of there is only going to be about 120 to like 140 degrees.
Most of the time, it's 70 to 80 degrees.
It's obviously dependent on how much superheat you're bringing back to the compressor. So if your superheat goes to crap, then it's going to be running a higher discharge temperature. But in, you know, your case, usually running, or even on these racks, they run a rather rich superheat coming back.
Not on the low temp, technically, with this setup. Like, they run, it's 40, 50 degrees by design. Like, they starve the coils.
Oh, okay.
On purpose in the big boxes, they starve the coils to make that discharge superheat, which makes everything less efficient. But like, it works. not my favorite. So they do. Go ahead.
No, I was wondering if you could like just like on the FTE tanks, the FTE Kaiser Warren does, where they lower the superheat. When we were talking to Dale about it, when they lower the superheat in order to create better efficiency, if you could do the same thing, but when you go into, so you run a good superheat 3 to 5 degrees all the time to get a lower temperature coming back, but then 10 minutes before it defrosts, you change the superheat setting. So your discharge temperature and you know, inherently just goes a little bit higher to get a little bit more heat transfer.
It'd be so easy because in microthermal, you could just go in, set it up for dual temp. And when it's in defrost, you flip the software switch to dual temp. You go from a 6 degree superheat setting to 12 or 15.
And let it stay the same set points, right? Like the same temperature you're still trying to achieve. The only thing you're going to change in that aspect is the freaking
EEVs and just, that would be the way to do it. Definitely the way to do it, which is how they do it on the medium temp defrost. So they're using gas defrost on the medium temp, except they're doing it a little differently. So on the medium temp, they are taking gas off the top of the receiver. Okay. So you got your vapor off the top of the receiver. Mm-hmm. Now you're running 33 to 35, whatever the set point is on the flat or on the flash tank. It all depends on the site. So they're going to take that. They're going to run it through a heat exchanger. That heat exchanger is coming off the discharge of the transcritical compressors. So what they're doing is they're taking the discharge gas off the heat exchangers or off a heat exchanger from the medium temp compressors, and they're running that vapor off the top of the receiver through it. So they're running them in reverse flow of each other. So the discharge gas is going one way, and then the vapor off the top of the receiver is going the other way.
Mm-hmm.
And then they run it through an ejector.
Oh.
They're using the ejector off the drop leg. So they use a single pass ejector off a drop leg to increase that pressure. They suck it basically through the ejector back out of the evaporator. So it goes through this heat exchanger, goes to a supply header, just like we did in the low temp.
I think I found it. Give me ein Moment, por favor. Sorry. Because I remember seeing it, and then I was like, oh, we don't need that. And I was like, oh, no, we do.
Today's episode is sponsored by the RefRushield RDP Series Differential Pressure Monitors from Westermeyer Industries, now available for transcritical CO2 systems in addition to other common pressures and refrigerants. When the filter element of your coalescing oil separator is contaminated, it can hurt your system's performance and efficiency. But how do you know when it's time to replace that filter? Wait too long to replace, and you could end up with a nasty filter blowout. But replacing too often can be a waste of time and money. The answer is installing a differential pressure monitor. The RDP series differential pressure monitors, including the new transcritical CO2 model, are available now from Westermeyer Industries. To find out more information, email sales@westermeyerin.com. That's WESTERMEYERIN.com.
Sorry. I can't freaking shake this flu. All right, there we go. I think this is what you're talking about, because I was looking at it and I was like, and then you said ejectors and I was like, oh, look.
Yep. So there it is right there. So they take.
Sorry.
So. Go. Go green line, leaving the receiver.
Green line, leaving the receiver. Got it.
You go up, you go gas out, then it goes through the heat exchanger.
Mm-hmm.
So it comes out of the heat exchanger as a red heat. The red line is a heated vapor.
So this line right here is just for clarification, coming out of the transcritical compressors, basically medium temp compressors flowing through here. These are all your heat reclaim that we're not using right now, except for this PHE. You're slamming it through the PHE to get some extra heat into the line coming off of the flash, which would be the flash tank, which now you're using that vapor for gas by heating it, then giving it more sensible heat. Go ahead, continue. Sorry.
Okay. Then it comes down, goes to your liquid header, or your defrost header right there. Then it goes to the liquid lines.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It goes through the liquid defrost.
Mm-hmm.
It defrosts the liquid line. It goes through the EVs, comes back and it goes to the return header. The return header goes through the ejector.
Got it.
The lift line through the ejector and then back into the receiver. So it creates like a 10 or 15 pound pressure drop. So it sucks on there. So it makes a 10 to 15 pound pressure drop on that return line. And that's how it does its defrost. Now, the way the ejector works is it's Venturi. So you got your drop leg coming down. Okay. That ejector is going to flow through there. It's going to go around the high pressure valve. It's going to flow through there. That ejector is creating that flow and it basically makes lift. So what it does is it shoots it past an orifice and it creates a suction effect. It creates lift by moving it past the orifice and it causes that blue line to reduce in pressure.
Yeah, it basically sucks it up in. I made a Venturi once for transferring desk pellets when I was doing air compressors. And so I had high pressure air compressor pressure going in the back of this big T. And then I had a vacuum fitting, like a shop vac, connected to the desk end because I was tired of carrying these 50 pound bags up a stairs. So by putting that pressure in there at a certain range, it was able to suck up the desk and eject it out here. So that's essentially what they're doing there.
Yes. So it's very simple with the single pass ejector, how they do it. Mm-hmm. When you get into multi-pass ejectors, that's where it gets super complicated. You're talking more solenoids. They're just using a Blimo valve to regulate this ejector basically. So that right where that green line, this is ejector valve open. That's a modulating Blimo valve. And that's modulating off of the pressure difference. So they're trying to keep 15-20 PSID of pressure difference between the flash tank and that suction line.
So while this is going on, this valve, the BGV or the FBGV in this instance would be closed then when it's doing this.
No, it's still open. It's still sucking on. It's still sucking and doing its thing. It's
really okay. It's
still sucking on that. The high pressure valve still doing its thing.
Okay. And this is just a motorized Blimo valve, 0 to 10 signal, right?
Yep. Okay. So just 0 to 10 signal. It's once you get to know it, it's super simple. But again, it's all dependent on whatever heat you have coming off the low temp. The biggest problem with this is, so if you look at the line feeding the heat exchanger on the low temp or on the medium temp, so you got the line feeding the heat exchanger, the hot gas off of the TC compressors. So there's a Blimo valve feeding the heat exchanger, okay, that basically bypasses the condenser. So there's two Blimo valves that work in parallel. They're the other one's not on here. The only problem is the one Blimo valve ends up wearing out on the discharge and it ends up high heading the rack.
Say that one more time because I lost you for a second.
Coming out of the compressors.
I'm there.
Okay, see that check valve that you just went over?
This guy?
Yeah, okay. That's a Blimo valve, technically. Okay. In all the ones I've seen.
Okay.
Those two valves work in parallel right next to each other. One's opening, one's closing. The problem is the one on the compressor side ends up jamming shut more often than on the heat exchanger ends up jamming shut more often than after they wear out. Basically there's a lot of heat on there and they don't last long, like a year and a half, and they end up losing position and they end up high heading the rack.
I wonder if they could just resolve that. Unfortunately, you'd have to move these heat reclaim units back, but I'm wondering if you could resolve that by putting a three-way valve, the MTAW or whatever, what you refer to as the...
They tried that and they were wearing out also.
Okay. I was just a thought because basically we'd use the same concept, yeah?
Yeah. It's all like durability of parts too. Like it's... But their ejector defrost is fairly simple. As far as I know, they are the only ones doing ejector defrost right now. I'm pretty sure they have it patented the way that they're doing it. So that's how Carnot does their medium temp defrost for their ejector style stuff. Super simple ejector, not much to it. But let's talk about zero zone now because I don't have a diagram, but this is very simple.
No, do you want to do the hot gas Carnot one? just briefly?
Oh, the high pressure one? Uh-huh. Yeah, that's fine.
All right, let's do it.
So this would be like their big warehouse stuff. So we have one of these. Like it's probably the biggest, to this day, the biggest CO2 rack I've started up. It's 1540 horses.
Damn.
Oh, it's massive. It was like 6,000 pounds of CO2.
Damn.
So coming out of here, you have, this is just like the Costco style with the accumulator and the intercooler style. So what you have here, if you follow the medium temp compressors, Brett, go up to the discharge. Okay. So coming off, you have,
this doesn't have the medium temp defrost. This one just shows the low temp.
Yeah, so it's just, this is just low temp defrost. This is nothing different.
Okay. Oh, I thought.
Yeah, it's the same thing as we already went over.
Oh, hold on.
That other slide you had.
Oh, wait, I wasn't muted. Yeah, I'll fix it later. This one? There we go.
Yeah, there it is. So, started the transcritical compressors. So starting at the transcritical compressors.
Yep. Here.
You come out and you have a line feeding out going down before the heat recovery units. You have a line feeding down.
Oh, that one right there.
Yep. That's your defrost header.
Oh, so that's straight. So I'm assuming that this is basically gonna stop any flow going out to any of these, and it's just gonna, like you would say, send it to Jesus out to the hot gas supply header. Yes.
Yes. So the store that we had, what they did is it looked almost exactly like a normal rack. So you had there was a Danfoss CCMT valve on a discharge line, and it was running a pressure difference. So it was trying to maintain like 20 pounds of pressure difference. It was running up and down, so they had that, and they had the discharge line coming off just before that valve going to the medium temp.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, to the liquid lines from a defrost header. So it was liquid reverse defrost.
Okay.
And it just shot full on discharge pressure, CO2, off the transcritical to the coils, down the liquid line, back down the suction, into a return header, except these dumped into the other side of the valve. So it was a discrete return. So it dumped into the other side of the return.
Oh, okay.
It went back on the other side of the valve. But when it, on the compressor side of the hot gas modulating valve, that fed your supply to your defrost header. Your defrost header return dumped back into the gas cooler, basically. So it was no different than our normal rack, except for instead of going down the suction line, they went down the liquid line.
Oh, gotcha. So,
it kicked ass.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure, because I mean, CO2 by itself has a lot of heat exchange, but then you're just letting 90 saturated drift right through that, 4 minutes defrost?
So these coils, two of these coils were the size of Connex boxes in this massive blast freezer. Mm-hmm. They would go one at a time. It was like 8 minutes.
Damn. Size of a Connex box?
Dude, there's 6 10 horsepower prop fans. There's three on each side of the box driving. This is the biggest spiral freezer I've ever like seen.
It was a spiral.
It's a spiral freezer. It's a spiral blast freezer.
Okay. All right. That makes more sense then.
Yeah, it's massive.
The only reason why I'm saying it, I've done industrial and I've never seen like a prop fan that big inside like a walk-in freezer. I've only seen it in a spiral.
Yeah, like they're like 3 foot blades. They're huge. So it is no different than defrosting a normal rack, except instead of going down the suction line, they go down the liquid. That's their high pressure, and everything has to be stainless. Or 140 bar piping.
Damn.
So it's all going to be HPX pipe or stainless. But the benefit to this system is it could shut down and not blow the reliefs. So because all the coils are rated for 140 bar, everything's rated for 140 bars. If this thing shuts off, the reliefs aren't popping.
Gotcha.
Like it can idle at 90 degrees in the middle of summer and sit there, and it's not going to blow relief. Gotcha. That is the nice part. Let's talk about the zero zone, because I think this is I don't have a diagram for this, but this is super simple. What zero zone is doing at the two stores I've seen, they come off of the transcritical medium temp compressors. And what they're doing is they have a header, your defrost, your discharge header. Before it goes to the gas cooler, there's a line coming off and there's a pressure reducing valve. So there's an outlet pressure regulator on there.
Okay.
And they're using the EMS to control it. And what it's doing is it's trying to control, at this store that we did, it was trying to control to 650 pounds. So it was trying to maintain that defrost header at 650 pounds. When something was in defrost, when something was not in defrost, it was trying to close the valve off and just keep it closed. Now, what it did is this was hot gas defrost down the suction line, just like we would normally check valves in the coils around everything, and liquid return, liquid would come back and it would dump into the flash tank.
Or just go to all the rest of the cases, right?
No, it was dumping in the flash tank.
Oh, it actually had its own return?
It had its own return header. And so you had a hot gas supply header, then you had a hot gas return header, and that hot gas return header dumped back into the flash tank.
See, what you're describing looks a lot like this right here. Because you're telling me that this one's off, the discharge gas is coming right off here. It looks like they're diverting it.
They're not so much diverting it. They're just pulling it off the header of the medium temp compressor. So that's where all your heat is. That discharge gas is 250, 230 degrees in the summer. You're getting that high temp discharge gas. You get that high heat exchange and latent heat and all that. But like at the end of the day, like especially with defrost, like you can't beat discharge superheat.
So on that one that you're talking about, that went off the discharge of the high temperature compressors, right?
Because they were doing medium temp and low temp defrost in the same rack.
Gotcha. Where this one right here, it looks like they're only doing low temp defrost, and they're utilizing this. I'm assuming this would probably be some sort of differential valve, or I don't know, like probably a Belimo valve, like maintaining a differential, because that's what a lot of them are. They'll have two pressure transducers on either side, just trying to make that differential. And you see on this one where it diverts it in through the suction, like you were saying, up and around here and then going back up through here and up back in the flash tank.
As far as I know, I think Carnot owns all the patents for liquid hot gas defrost down the line. So that's why everybody else is doing it. Everybody else is playing the...
What could we do that's never been done before?
Or what could we do that's out of, you know, patent infringement?
True.
Yeah, that's how zero zone does it. It's fairly simple. Now, the only problem we had with it is, so they had a relief on that line. It was like 850 pounds. And the valve would chirp the relief nonstop between microthermal having an issue or a sudden change in pressure that it didn't account for. It would chirp the relief. The only problem with this, the way this was set up, is the relief vented to the relief header. If it were me, it should have vented to the flash tank, because if it blew the relief, okay, it's going to happen, but let it blow into the flash tank. And if the relief's really blowing and there's an issue, it's going to relieve the pressure to the flash tank. It should relieve to another part of the system.
Yeah, but here's the problem. Like, if the pressure's high enough, it wouldn't be able to relieve, right?
What do you mean?
Like it would still relieve, but like it would only do it. You're only going to flow if you have differential, right? So you can only have guaranteed flow to atmosphere. Right?
But if you're at 850 pounds in a flash tank, it's already blown too.
True.
Because the flash tank reliefs are at 650.
Mm-hmm.
So you should already be blowing way before that.
No, I got you.
So like that was my only reason I didn't like that, is because it wasn't venting It vented out the system. And then, like, on startup, we had the controls guy playing with stuff, and he sent the PID base value to percent, and it blew the entire charge when we were gone.
Oh, no.
And then the relief stuck, of course, because it got dry ice in the relief. So it stuck, and there's nothing you could do. There was no tree on it, so not good.
Speaking of which, since we're talking about it, is there anything you think that we could do in order to not make that happen?
What, the dry ice?
Yeah, the only other thing...
It happens on all of them. The only way to stop it's a relief tree.
Why? Why would a relief tree do it?
Because you manually could shut it off.
You're just switching it over.
Is to manually switch the relief over. Unless you couldn't have a CDS valve on it, because that would be...
It would be a true blue relief.
Correct. So
no, I get it, but even if you put it through a heat exchanger.
Yeah, but it's not that. It's at the tip of the relief is where it happens.
No, I know, but what I'm saying is if you were able to, when it reliefs, if you were to run hot gas through it, because why does that happen? Because you have liquid droplets. You have a very wet vapor inside that flash tank and the top end of that flash tank, right? So because there's so much turbulence of stuff going in, stuff going out. So I'm wondering if you would boil off the refrigerant off the flash tank before actually going to the relief, if that would wonder. No? Yes?
No, because it's not off theirs. It's a hot gas line. So it's off a discharge. So it just happens to all of them. I've seen it do it on suction reliefs too.
Yeah.
The only way to stop it is for you to physically shut it off. Unfortunately, with the way it is. But that's the way the Zero Zone's doing it. It's super simple. You just like Brett's dot, like got ugh, just like how Brett has it on there. It goes backwards through the coil. It goes around the EEV through a check valve on the liquid line, comes mm-hmm. back down the liquid line, and then it dumps into the flash tank. Not how Brett shows, but.
Oh, it doesn't go up that way?
It doesn't go through a defrost. I guess it would.
I guess you'd have to. Otherwise, then you'd be delivering whatever liquid is being created, just like a regular rack.
Yeah, that one's just goofy. It doesn't. Oh, I see what they're doing. They're dumping at that one. They're dumping the low temp compressors into the flash tank.
Yes.
Yes. I'm not a fan of that style rack.
I want to get up. I gotta get some pictures from Zero Zone. Apparently.
Yeah, that's their way of doing hot gas defrost at the stores that I've seen, and it works. Once you get that main defrost differential valve, once you get that tuned in mm-hmm. and get a good PID for it and a good base value, it works fairly well. The only other issue we had was a check valve sticking. That was a coil manufacturing issue.
Oh, really?
Oh,
stuff in the check valve or what?
So we got blamed for tons of stuff. It was, there was trash in the system, yada, yada, yada. Then they came out and changed the check valves, but they were all stainless. So the manufacturer came out and changed them. This dude comes out with a Metabo and cuts out the check valve.
Oh, boy.
And then looks at me and goes, yeah, look, see the debris. I go, you just cut that out with a grinder. A cutoff wheel. Like, he's cut through the weld. Like, he's like, no, I'll see debris. I'm like, debris? Like, you just cut it with a... You just asked me for a Metabo cutoff wheel. Like, what do you mean debris? Yeah, there's debris. There's oil in it.
You just put the debris in there.
So that they changed, like, 7 or 8 check valves while this was going on. Then, it like, they would randomly stick, and they would flood out the rack.
Oh, that'd be horrible.
Dude, I have never seen flood back so bad in my entire life through on CO2.
Two years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, I watched it. I was sitting there. It was like me and Jake were getting ready to wrap up for the week, and the startup was done, and we heard it, and I just watched the entire rack move back and forth on the springs, like 8 inches. Like, it's shaking this massive rack, and it just... And all of a sudden, there goes all the oil's gone, and everything is white. Every compressor is white.
I remember having that conversation with you. I've never seen that superheat.
It was so bad. It was pure liquid coming back. And it happened in seconds. And then it would reset, and the check valves would reset, and they'd be fine.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, after like months of dealing with this,
mm-hmm.
we convinced the customer to let us cut all the stainless check valves. And we ended up putting Mueller 4 bolts in, and they haven't had a single problem since.
Was there a certain pressure differential you had to have?
No, because they had to be 800 PSI rated, which the Muellers are. There was like 750 or something like that. That's what under the reliefs were. Gotcha. So they were under, it was under the working load, never had a single one stick now. Bit violent.
Mueller for the win.
Yeah. Rebuildable check valves. That was a thing. Like every time we had to change one, that company would have to come out and they'd have to TIG weld it. And I don't know about you, but I'm not good at that good at TIG welding yet, especially in a freezer. Like that, they'd be miserable.
I don't weld.
Yeah, I'm learning because we have to with this. Because we've had like multiple, we've had to change a heat exchanger on a Carnot rack that we had to get TIG welded back in. And it was in like a terrible spot. We had to cut the rack section and get in there because you couldn't get the orbital welder on there because you need at least like 3-4 inches on each side to get the orbital welder in. So they had to get TIG welded by hand.
Gotcha.
Husband hot gas, I haven't really seen. Do you have that LMP one?
Yeah, that's the one. It's the one I was just sharing. So I got to read through the actual theory of it, but basically it looks like they're closing this off a little bit to get the flow going through the solenoid in through the liquid line. Or no, in through the suction line, I'm sorry, in through the suction line. Then you have the suction stop valve here, so it stops the flow here, injects right in the rear end and the suction of the compressor, and like you said, around the check valve, up through here, and it looks like it's going through this defrost valve, but I haven't read yet what that defrost valve is, unless they're working in unison to try to maintain flow, and then back up and drops right it back into the flash tank there.
That's fairly simple.
Yeah.
Every one of these manufacturers is going to have a different way of doing it.
Yeah, for sure.
Just for the fact that they're all playing the patent game where they're trying to get around getting sued by somebody. Is it over?
Yeah. All right. I got to go.
All right. Bye.
All right. Bye.